Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, your host. I hope you're having a fancy Friday with a little snow coming down. I got a lot on my mind today. There's been a lot of stuff going on, and hopefully we can cover some ground. True Wealth, as always, is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Coins Plus is always buying and selling all forms of rare coins and precious metals, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. It's kind of important for me to explain, folks. People think our business, by the way, 444-0044 or toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website coinsplus.com. People often think that all we do is just sit around and buy gold and silver. And folks, if that was the case, I'd have been out of here a long time ago. I'd be so bored I couldn't see straight. We deal in high volume everything, rare coins, diamonds, jewelry, but mainly coins. I mean, we buy and sell them literally by the truckload, and that includes everything from garbage foreign coins. You know, I shouldn't call them garbage. They're kind of neat. We sell them by the pound, you know, 12, 15 bucks a pound, which gives you about 120 coins, you know, which is cool stuff from all over the world back through time and all the way up to extraordinary rarities. I mean, we have literally had in our shop here in Spokane some of the most famous coins in the world, coins that there's only five known, the 1913 Liberty Nickel. We've had two in the shop. 1885 proof trade dollar. I don't know how many of those there are, maybe a dozen or less, or probably less, probably six or something. We've had that in the shop, one of those. We've had an 1804 bust silver dollar, etc. So we go from one end of the spectrum to the other. And, you know, ironically, you'd think those coins I just mentioned, folks, worth millions each, by the way, literally. And you might think, what? Why would someone spend that kind of money here? Boy, that's crazy for a little coin. Well, it may be crazy, but they have outperformed anything in your imagination. I mean, when I built my building here in 2005, I think we finished in 06, I sold my coin collection. And my coin collection had gone up profoundly. Like 4 to 8 times, depending on the coin. And, so I literally had a tremendous amount of money, you know, tied up, a couple hundred thousand that had gone up to over $1 million over a period of time of probably coins I'd put in there, maybe over a decade roughly. And of course, then, you know, when the market went into gold and silver, I moved over to that. I started getting all my customers together and moving them into precious metals. I was pushing it hard, and I don't know why I had a gut on it. And then gold and silver ran hard. My people have done very well there. I will admit fault, and that fault, there's two areas I've made fault. And I think everyone fell for one of them, and that's overbuying into the bull market. And what I mean by that is, when silver just kept rolling and rolling and rolling, you know, it started a very healthy climb in 2007. It kind of peaked out a little bit in 12. And then Obama went to work. Obama started his dirty work. And what he did is he got all the world central bankers together. And he created a mass manipulation game, which included having two of the central banks at a time out of, I think, maybe 14 in the world, a massive amount of short contracts on the precious metals market, thereby shorting the market. Back when they created the Federal Reserve Act, they created the COMEX, which is the Commodities Exchange. They did that outwardly. They said, oh, this is a way for people to trade their, hedge their commodities. To basically what they're trying to do is keep people from having all their faith in commodities. The truth of the matter is the COMEX gave the government and major world entities, and later on a very rich person, rich guys called the Hunt brothers, the ability to manipulate or control the markets. And it's a way to maintain control of the money supply. Otherwise, everybody would jump on board or stay on board the gold and silver. And so when they when they did that, they left leverage out there for people with incredible wealth. In 1980, the Hunt brothers used it to their benefit. They started to basically correct the market. They started to use futures to drive the market up. And then they were taking delivery of the physical metal. And they had the Hunt brothers were so wealthy in 1980. By today's standards, they'd almost be trillionaires. And then after that, the government put a cease and desist on them, told them they must stop doing this, even though it was perfectly legal. They weren't doing anything illegal, but you know how the government works. And they said, no, this is legal. And they said, well, let me show you legal. And they locked them up for a couple days, let the market kind of unwind pretty heavily, and essentially got their attention and got them to cease and desist. So the other mistake that I made, so I said number one mistake I made was I overbought into the bull market. So what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is it was running hard and long. And so it basically ran really hard for 5 years. And then kind of it stayed solid for another year. And then Obama went to work and started his mass manipulation. And it went down. And I allowed people to stay in too long. I did move a number of people at the peak out into rare coins. And I had some people cranky, you know, no, I want gold, I want silver, blah, blah, blah. You know, people come in with this, excuse me, but brick-headed kind of an approach, which is, it's kind of hard, folks, because what it is, it's like is having, I suppose, being a doctor and looking at someone's body and saying, you have cancer. And they're like, no, I don't. And you're like, yes, you do. And they just want to argue, and they say, no, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this and take that because someone else I read said, I just have a parasite. And you're like, no, I've seen the MRIs. You have cancer. No, I just have a parasite. And if I just take this special tonic, I'll be fixed. Well, that's sort of what it's like here sometimes. People come in and they go online and they want their gold eagles and their silver eagles or whatever. That just seems to be the thing everybody does. Because that's what people pitch out there, especially the silver eagles, because the premiums are too high for silver. I mean, you're buying an ounce of silver, and if you say $17 silver, I mean, silver eagles will cost you over $20 a piece for an ounce of silver. And people go, well, I like them because they got a face value on them. Okay, they got a $1 face value. You're paying $20 for a $1 bill. Now, how does that work? And what I always say is if you want a face value, buy the old silver dollars. You can buy old U.S. peace dollars from the 1920s for a little bit less than $20, actually, like probably closer to $19. And they have a $1 face value. They're legal tender. They're silver. And they have upside based on two arenas, what we call semi-numismatic. They can go up with gold or silver or precious metals, and they can go up with the collectible coin market. But anyway, people have this approach, and we're like, you know, when the bull market was real strong and, you know, even maybe flatlining a little bit, and everybody wanted gold and silver, everybody thinks that's the stuff because they saw it go up. It's simple. They go, hey, that's what's mentioned in the Bible. Well, you know, the Bible mentions real estate too, but it doesn't distinguish between real estate in the middle of, you know, the Sinai desert with real estate down on, you know, the Sea of Galilee or real estate down on the Mediterranean. And there's a drastic difference. And you need to realize that all real estate is not alike. Real estate is a sector. It's a form of physical wealth. Coins and bullion are a sector. They are a form of physical wealth. They are a form of, solid, tangible asset that continuously grows. There is some volatility, yes, but in general, it grows. Precious metals have volatility. Okay, now right now, what do I think about the metals? Right now, I think the metals are a good value. I think I really believe, literally, 98.5% that we are at a very firm, safe basis, bottom. People say, you know, there's always this hairy dent. If you search around the web and you go to some of the silver and gold spot price sites, there's old Harry Dent has his ad bouncing off the screen. Is gold going? And he's got a computerized ad generator that takes whatever the gold price is and it cuts it in half. So if gold's $1,400, it'll say, is gold going to $700? Find out how. And then you go click on his thing and he gives you this big long paragraph or a big long page and then says, pay $49 to find out more. And then you go pay the $49, which I would never do. And then he's like, he still doesn't tell you anything and says, get our newsletter for $69 a month and learn how to make millions of dollars from pennies you have sitting around or whatever. And, you know, if gold's $1,800, it'll say, gold's going to $900. It just cuts in half. And people read this stuff and come in and they don't realize, folks, you've got to understand me. Every single thing you read on the internet, if you're using all the major search engines, is now paid for. I hate it. You cannot do an organic search on Google or, you know, whatnot. What you need to know is the website to go to. So if you want to know about joint implants or whatever you call them, or, you know, like hip replacements or finger joints or something, whatever, you have to know where to go search it. If you search, you know, modern, you know, I don't know what the term is. I shouldn't have picked that category. But anyway, you know, modern hip replacement technology or methods or prosthetics or whatever they're called, you're going to just get what some company paid for you to get. So you, when you think you're out researching what to invest in and the precious metals and all that, you might get a lot of good information, but you're not getting the absolute truth. You're not getting the breadth. I was just talking to my son last night. He's working here. He's been here off and on for years, for literally decades. He's going full time now. And there was things, he's got a mind like a steel trap, he's a genius, he's very knowledgeable, but there's just things that you can only learn by experience. And I told him that. I said, you know, there are things in life, it's called the PhD of life. There are things in life you can only learn by experience. You can read all the books in the world, but that doesn't mean you know how to handle a coin. You can't learn how to detect counterfeit coins from a book. You got to handle tons and tons of coins. You know, you can't totally learn real customer service from a book. Or you can't learn how to communicate with somebody properly, totally from a book. You got to have experience, which is the problem with this millennial generation. You know, we should wrap them all in bubble wrap and put on their fragile. Handle with care and say, I'm offended on the front or something. You know, the social media is stripping away their God-given ability to interact among themselves. Interpersonal communications. But there's only things you can learn from experience. I've got 20 years, of professional experience and a lifetime of experience with coins. And 20 years of intensive experience buying and selling a phenomenal amount of coins and precious metals at a level that most, you know, the quantities most people don't believe. But the fact of the matter is, so through all that experience, I've learned a ton about coins. It reminds me when I was in banking, I worked for one bank and then another bank. And both of those banks, I got to know their stock so well that I could buy and sell that stock and make money on it just while I worked for the company because I knew that stock so well. And when I left when I started the coin business and I got out of banking, I had stock options with both companies and I sold one on a certain day and the other, Bank of America, on another day. And I sold those stocks on the single highest day it had ever been before and since then. Clear back in the 90s, it was after I had my coin shop running and I had 401ks and IRAs laying out there. And I finally decided, this is absolutely foolish. I mean, I've got all my money sitting around in the stock market. Thank goodness I got out before the dump. If you guys remember, 99 looked a lot like now. You know, everything was great. Everything was hunky-dory. People were all excited. You know, the market's strong. I talked the other day about the VIX index, maybe, or maybe I didn't. But there's a thing called the VIX index. It's a volatility index that keeps track of consumer confidence, consumer sentiment, along with short and long contracts. Short contracts, if there's an excess of short contracts, that means that investors are betting on a future market drop. If there are long contracts, that means they're betting that the market's going up. One thing that's very interesting, the VIX index is always right, even if going back and applying it all the way back to the stock market crash of 29, everything. Okay, it's always right. How is it always right? It's right because the people are always 100% wrong. How about that? The people. So what's going on right now? The VIX index has virtually no short contracts. That means every American is convinced that this bull market's going to run forever. It's not going to stop. There's hardly anybody hedging it out there. And I'm telling you what, the VIX index says it is doomsday coming around the corner. That is, the people are always wrong. They always buy into the hype. And that's what I was saying I did during the precious metals bull market. Now, why would you say, you might say, wait a minute, you're telling me you deal in precious metals and the market was roaring and you would have cycled out looking back? Of course I would have. Why? Because there are overgrowth periods, you know. When metals go from $4 a troy ounce in 2003 or whatever it is, or 2004, actually probably 05, you know, it was say $5 an ounce in 05. And then it's like $50 an ounce by 11. That's a little too much, right? I mean, you go 5 to 50, that's 1,000% return in 6 years. That's too much. I think anybody would agree. What is that, 175% a year or something? So, yeah, and I allowed a lot of people. I moved a lot of people out, but I allowed a lot of people to kind of bully me. Because what had happened is I'd proven to be wrong. I'd say, well, I think you should be conservative. I think we should move you over here. And they'd come back 2 months later and say, did you see what gold and silver have done since you told me not? Yeah, I did. Okay. I'll just succumb to it, you know, and let people do what they want. Well, why I'm saying all this is right now, I am really believing that you need to be balanced. Don't get me wrong. I love gold. I personally have a lot of it as an individual. I've been accumulating it lately, readily, as rapidly as possible. Same with silver. But I also have a lot of good quality numismatic coins. And when I want bulk silver, I buy like generic silver dollars. If I want bulk gold, I try to buy like the old $20 gold pieces. I don't know what our inventory is sitting at right now on those. But I'm going to tell you, folks, if you haven't bought some of the St. Gaudens, just, you need them. They're beautiful. They're around an ounce of gold. Around is in 99% of it. They were legal tender coinage made to circulate when we were on the gold standard. Gold was $20 a troy ounce. The St. Gaudens is $20. Actually, the St. Gaudens gold was $20.20 an ounce. And so the St. Gaudens had $20 face value and $20 worth of gold. So the 20 cents is the 1% that's missing. So it's 99% pure gold, okay, which is fine. It's totally fine, and it's an ounce of gold by everybody's trade. But the point is, they cost these antique 100-plus-year-old Augustus St. Gaudens $20 gold pieces, argued to be some of the most beautiful coins ever made by a wonderful sculptor who did work all over D.C. These are literally trading within a few singular percentage points in value to precious metals-based bullion coins, okay? So they're a tremendous value. Silver dollars are good. And I'll tell you, folks, one thing is the strategy. I had someone asking me earlier this week, what's our strategy? What's our strategy? They've been buying into, you know, the conservative side of finance, buying precious metals and coins and things like that, and they've seen things decrease a little bit. What they may not realize is their semi-numismatic stuff doesn't respond the same way. It's supply and demand driven, so it can actually go up while metals go down. But the fact of the matter is, I said patience, because if you think about it, the asset categories that I mention are in the Bible: gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones. So let's talk about those right now. What are your investment options? This is what you have to ask yourself. And I also remember these are sectors, okay? Now, gold and silver, that's the precious metals-based sector. That's the coin sector. It's all the same. Do not think of bullion as a little cube like chicken bullion you put in soup. Bullion just means you're buying the value of the item, the intrinsic value. It's an entire arena market. We're on secure dealer networks. The world's full of it. I don't care if it's silver dollars, you know, all this stuff. You have to understand, folks, all these coins have been made by world mints out of gold and silver, primarily. Ironically enough, when we do advanced portfolios, balanced portfolios, we put in all kinds of collectible coins. I'll even put in like a roll of, you know, if someone spends a certain amount of money, I'll put in, you know, even a roll or two of uncirculated war nickels that are silver, or I'll put in, you know, a roll of better date pennies, an old roll of key date Indian pennies. And people are like, pennies? Yeah, pennies. I remember back in the 90s having this little consortium with dealers, and we were trying to predict what was going to be the best investment vehicle in our industry. What would grow the most over the next, you know, whatever, and say 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Everyone agreed, pennies. And you're like, pennies. I'm not talking just wheat pennies that you get out of your change. I'm talking like old collectible Indian pennies, not just Indian pennies, certain specific dates like 1877, 1872. These are dates that are very scarce. And we've proven to be correct. They've outperformed everything, hands down, bar none. Do I have these? Absolutely. But it's not your whole portfolio. It's just a balancing act. And we have rolls of all kinds of stuff. Lincoln pennies, 11Ss. The 1911S Indian or Lincoln penny, I think in 20 years, has probably gone from $5 to $50, you know, and it's rare. There's no excess of them. Trust me, we buy a ton. We know. But anyway, that was a side note. But just realize we've got all kinds of stuff that we put in portfolios, and that's where you just come in and you got to trust us at some point. Along the trust lines, I had a kind of an interesting thing this week, and I don't want to spend a bunch of time on it, but I had a good friend a few years back pass away, and his widow got an inheritance, and as he was on in the hospital, he told his family to, you know, if anything happened, to come see me, and they did, and the widow, you know, just wanted to get a fair amount of it with a stockbroker. And I just, because of my closeness to the family, I just did not want to, you know, delve too deep. And so I let her do that. And anyway, essentially recently I had to confront the guy because, you know, he was doing what I tell you stockbrokers do. They're playing on a woman's emotions. They're casting doubt. She's lost a tremendous amount of money in what should be a bull market. And it's like, folks, I say this and people just don't believe me, but it's true. These guys have so many losers. You can't predict the future. You're speculating. When you think about it, when you buy paper investments, you are betting on man. You're betting on a casino-driven market. stocks are not valued based on the company's equity. They're based on hype. They're based on emotional speculation. It's a fact. They are all over the board. People try to outguess currency for future currency exchange, and they're trying to find a secret sleeper. Folks, give it up. I mean, that is not what God said to do. When Solomon says to diversify among many assets, you know, among many items, I mean, they didn't have, you know, a bunch of paper junk back then, and Solomon was massively wealthy. He was a trillionaire. What he meant, you know, he would say, well, you know, you should definitely invest part of your money in a nation. You know, you definitely want to own a few countries, and then after that, you should probably buy at least a couple million acres that are covered in the cedars of Lebanon for logging in case you ever need to build another empire. You know, I mean, and gold mines, you definitely need to own gold mines, I'm sure Solomon would say. You want to own all the gold mines in the world. Those are really good investments, you know. I mean, but you think about it, it's all asset-driven. It's asset-based. I've got a little life experience, and I've seen it. I've been... Folks, I was in banking for years, and I just sat at and dealt with one person after the other's money. And I'm talking in depth, not like these Wells Fargo guys now that are just, you know, frontline account execs with no authority. I was back in the day with Norwest Banks that got consumed by Wells Fargo, but it was one of the last small bigger banks that operated like a small bank. We had authority. We had relationships. We loaned to people, not to credit scores. And although the credit scoring is a good guideline, a lot of it's inaccurate. There's all kinds of ways you can structure your credit usage to get an artificially high score. You can also decide that you want to shop around for credit cards and try to find the best rate and see who will approve you. And if you apply for four or five credit cards, all of a sudden you ruin your credit now for the next 24 months because you have too many inquiries and your credit score drops. But as far as paying your bills, nothing changed, you know. So things have definitely changed when they went to the computerized system for sure. We used to have to use our brains to make decisions with people. And there, how's that for a concept for you, right? But, you know, I was in that business back in the day. I've dealt with tons of people and their money and their finances, and I know what people make, and I know what their savings accounts are like. I know what performance. I've been Series 6 and 7 licensed when I was with Bank of America. That's where you are licensed to deal in equities and bonds and funds and everything like that, and I used to teach people how to do it, how to sell, and I was good. I understand that business. They thrive on churning. They have all kinds of products that pay too much and that they incentivize the brokers to sell you something that's not in your best interest, to be candid, but it's in their financial best interest. And so that's what motivates their and drives them and determines what they sell you. They really don't know. You think, you know, they're going to purport themselves like experts, but the fact of the matter is they're just taking your money, giving you a false sense of confidence, and then you're gone, and they don't know. They just throw it. It doesn't matter to them. Sure, they'd like it if you make money. But if you don't, they've got all the sayings, you know, hey, you don't want to take out now or you will realize your loss. As long as you don't pull it out, you haven't realized your loss. You take, you know, the case I was talking about, you put in $700,000 that you inherited. And then while the market's booming, you lose $200,000 over 3 years. And then brokers are trained to manipulate. They literally get trained to manipulate based on emotion. Edward Jones hired Grant Cardone years back, which is a car closing. It's a company that teaches people how to sell cars. They hired Grant Cardone to learn how to stop people from pulling their money out when the market was terrible. And they, you know, they went to every extreme and every extent. You wouldn't believe it. I saw customers, females, crying because they tried to get their money out and these people would beat them up so bad. Folks, it's your money, okay? It's not their business. You do not need their permission. And you just have to realize and understand this. If you are a people pleaser, you do not ever want to deal with anybody like that, because you will always make the wrong decision. You are going to make a decision based on how a person feels about you, whether they like you or not, and whether you're hurting their feelings. Logic is so important. In the case I was talking about a bit ago, the gal says to me, well, I think he's a nice guy with good intentions. He just can't find a good investment. Okay, he's a stockbroker. Okay, a nice guy with good intentions that can't find a good investment, and he's a stockbroker. Get away. But the fact of the matter is, in my experience, that's par for the course. That is what happens to everybody. And there's people that'll say, oh, my stuff's going up, or I know people who are making money. You know, no, you know people that say they're making money. There's so many different ways. What is making money? Is making money after their $100 a share stock went to $6 and now it's back to 30? Or is it, you know, from the bottom of the market in 08 till now, they're up a little bit? Or, you know, or is it because they've got two statements that said they made 0.13%? I mean, I'm telling you, folks, it really is that complicated and convoluted. I'm not just selling against my industry. I'm selling wisdom. I'm selling biblical wisdom. I can back up everything I say biblically. They cannot. I've had conversations in grand depth with them, and they get to the point where they don't care what the Bible says. They don't care. Then all of a sudden, these born-again believers, the Bible becomes an irrelevant old relic. You know, what it says, it doesn't really mean when God talks about gold in Genesis 2, and he gives it his highest endorsement, the word tov, the greatest, best, you know, health, wealth, prosperity, everything, the most positive. It didn't really mean that. That's just because all he had at the time, right? And he didn't, it wasn't that important that Solomon accumulated all the gold on earth and built the most incredible temple on earth out of gold. And it's not that important that God said, get all the gold and silver from those people over and over again and said, it's mine and it belongs to you. It didn't matter that gold was the very first gift that Jesus Christ got on earth from the wise men. Why? That's not a coincidence, because God brought him the most overall precious thing on earth. It's beautiful. It's got all kinds of phenomenal properties because God made it that way. It's worth money, always will be. And to these brokers, it doesn't matter that God says he fills heaven with gold. And it doesn't matter, you know, that God tells us that you're going to cast your gold and silver in the streets on the last day before his judgment comes. And none of that matters, because we're smarter now. We're super intelligent. And their attitude is, oh, well, you just use our paper investments to get the gold, but you need our stuff. You know, they say, why would you want gold? It doesn't pay dividends. Gold doesn't earn anything. Folks, neither do your stocks. And if they did, you're betting on people. Can stocks go to zero overnight? Absolutely. Have they? All the time, more than you could ever count. Can gold go to zero overnight? No. Has it ever? No. Why do I say no? Do you think that God is going to fill heaven, build heaven out of something that becomes worthless rubbish? Do you think that he's going to build heaven out of something that he gave his greatest endorsement to in Genesis chapter 2? Do you think he's going to build heaven out of something that he also used to build the temple, the second temple under Solomon, that becomes worthless rubbish? Or is he going to build heaven out of something that when he gave his son gold as his first gift as a child on earth, that it really is just toilet paper? Do you really think that? No. He tells us it's good stuff. Is he going to build heaven out of something that you're going to be casting, that the Bible says you will cast your gold and silver in the streets, it says, because it cannot buy salvation. People know at that point it's over. It's kind of like a man walking to the electric chair, and they say, what is your last wish? And he says, well, I'd really like to take an ounce of gold with me. And people would be like, what? You know, because he's on earth. He's going to pass through to one side or the other. The physical metal on this side won't. It's not going to buy him salvation on the other side. It's not going to prevent him from dying on this side. At that point, it's dead. It's over. Okay. On the day of your death, if you know your death is coming, it's worthless. Okay. That's the point. So understand that. God is not going to endorse something at the level he has and use it as the highest, most pinnacle example in his word. Folks, let me tell you, if gold became worthless, there's 800 verses in the Bible that become worthless. If gold becomes worthless, the Bible becomes worthless. It's same with silver. It's not going to happen. Get it out of your head. Stop letting people lie to you. You know, they're like, oh, look, gold's been going down. It's been this, it's been that. Folks, the trend lines are insane. You don't buy stuff and live on it for 6 days and say, well, is it up? Is it down? No, you accumulate wealth. That feels good. And, you know, hindsight investing is terrible. I deal with people sometimes that are like, well, if I'd have done this, you know, on November, you know, if I'd have bought this stock November 17th of 2012, and sold it on October 13th of 2016, you know I would have tripled my money. And the answer is, you would have never bought it that day. You would have never sold it that day. You didn't even know what it was. That's why you didn't buy it, or you didn't have the money. And if you did have the money, you'd have bought it. And if you happened to buy it that day and it started going up after it went up a little bit, you'd freak out and say, oh my gosh, I'm making a good profit. The market would correct a little bit. You'd freak out and you'd dump it. I mean, you watch these graphs. You don't look at a stock one day and say, well, look at it 4 years ago and look at it now. No, because what you look at is the volatility along the way. When you look at that volatility, first of all, when you buy it, there's margins and fees and all kinds of junk packed in them. And even if stock's 45 bucks an ounce today or a share today and you put in a buy order, all of a sudden you got it at 40 bucks. You're like, what just happened? Or, you know, or 50 bucks. I mean, it goes up. I did that back in the day when I used to play with that stuff. It was annoying. I'd say, oh, you know, such and such stock's $52.50 a share. I'm going to hit a buy. And all of a sudden I end up with it at 56 and three quarters. I'm like, what happened? What happened is brokers have a certain amount of stock on Wall Street, the brokers, the big boys that move the stuff around to dump. And they find a sucker like you or I, and they dump a lot that somebody has a sell order at 56 and three quarters. That makes it easier for them to sell the rest of it lower. They go at you backwards. If you put a stop loss on it, if you say, I want to buy this stock at $52.50 a share, you're not going to get it until the stock's down to 49 and a half. And then all of a sudden they're going to dump someone's sell order at 3 points over. I mean, it's a fact. Same thing happens when you sell. There's so many ways they consume your money. They churn and burn you. They say, you know, yeah, you lost on that one. I'll tell you, that is one of the most common phrases you're going to hear out of a broker too. If you want to actively trade with a broker, folks, any of you out there that have done this, you know I'm telling the truth when probably the most common phrase you hear out of their mouth over years is, well, yeah, I know, that one didn't work out. That one didn't do what we thought it was going to do. That one didn't perform so well. Shucks, I don't know. A friend of mine who made a huge mistake buying into a broker asked him, she said, why am I losing all this money? He said, I don't know. It shouldn't be doing that, he said to her. Oh, thanks. That's reassuring. And then they dump the guilt trip on them. It's your fault. You didn't buy on time. You sold too early, you know, or you want to sell now. You're going to lose your money, folks. I'm telling you, I don't want to spend the whole show on this, but I'm telling you, it's a passionate thing. And then I ran into the same situation. I know the guy, Christian supposed broker, who I basically referred to in the past when I shouldn't have, and he will undermine other people to try to benefit himself, to try to get money. We don't do that here, okay? I mean, I do what is right. I'll sell you a product, and it'll go in the safe deposit box. I won't call you and bug you and say, hey, well, you need to turn this over, roll that out, buy this, sell that, make money here, get rid of that. No, I just don't do it. Maybe I should, maybe, you know, not to make money, but whatever. Some people might appreciate that, but we just don't do that. You know, and I use facts and evidence and reality, and I use the Bible. You either believe in the Bible or you don't. And sure, you know, whenever things aren't looking perfect, people mock you. You know, you got to realize the whole world system is tied up in this. Just because you can get in a room with a bunch of people that are all telling you the same thing doesn't make it true or right. The mob is not always right. The mob is usually wrong, to be honest with you. That's the point of the VIX index. When the whole society says it's going up, it's going up, it's going up, you better get out. Warren Buffett said that himself. He said, when single mothers on welfare are buying stocks, I'm going to get out. He says, bulls get rich, pigs get slaughtered, okay? If you have greed, which is what I'm basically talking about here at the stockbroker level, you're not operating by the correct motives, okay? So just please be aware of this. It's not a matter of bias. It's a matter of fact. And these people's portfolios in general are performing terribly. So I'll just leave it at that. Something else with the time I've got left, I have on my heart. And by the way, folks, I do believe this is a great time to buy. And let us build you a portfolio. It's so important. You know, I see things so often in it. Like I said, my two biggest mistakes during the bull market was allowing the people to continue too long. I bought in a little bit, but I really tried to avoid confrontation. And the second issue was to not come across stronger to diversify people near the peak. Now, at the lower end of the bull market, I was all over it. I was like load up on just basic bullion. I mean, I believe that we timed a lot of it right for our clients. Over time, as we've grown bigger and more nationally renowned, we're able to buy metals cheaper. Not that it's a ton, but it's 0.25% here and 0.25% there. And we're able to sell for less. We're able to operate on smaller margins because our volume's higher. We're able to sell coins at wholesale, dealer wholesale, and investment packages because of being well capitalized over the years. That means having enough money to carry a phenomenal, incredible inventory. We have been able to let the market go up considerably so that we can afford to sell coins at wholesale. What do I mean by wholesale? Basically the price we'd buy them at, real close to that. So the margins become negligible. Then when we build a portfolio, we don't just randomly grab a bunch of stuff. If I say, someone says, I want a silver dollar portfolio, I don't just go buy it, just give them a big bucket of dollars and say, here you go, have a nice day. I do everything from barter level dollars all the way up to a few pinnacle pieces that have outperformed everything for decades, to semi-numismatic, nicer quality, more common dates, to, you know, more scarce dates, cars and cities, etc. Okay. Having a portfolio is just a way to win, folks. It responds, believe it or not, our entire sector responds to metal moves up, but if metals dropped more, it wouldn't affect the price of 99.7% of the coins we sell as investments, okay? I've got a lot of other stuff on my mind, as I said today. I can't believe how fast an hour goes sometime, but I think that last thing was a little bit important to me. Man, what do we got going on? Trump's tax plan, okay? I'm not going to get into too in-depth on that. One thing that concerns me, folks, is you are either supply-side economics or you are not, okay? And what I mean by that is you've heard of the trickle-down effect, okay? That means that if you let people at the top have money, they spend it in mass, and it trickles down through the economy. They call it, the left calls it a trickle. They say, that's a lie. We want trickle up. That is pure foolishness, okay? Because what happens, where do poor people spend their money? First of all, they spend it at Walmart, and things like this, right? And in a lot of cases, they spend it on drugs and alcohol and cigarettes. And I mean, that's just a fact of life. It's not a discrimination. It's a fact. So if that's the case, okay, the cigarette company gets wealthy. But if they're spending it at Walmart, where does it go? Okay, where it goes is a lot of it goes to the employees at Walmart. And they're also below the poverty line. And then they go and they spend it in the same manner on life and drugs and alcohol, whatever. Not all of them. I realize that. But I'm just saying in general, as a pattern, they live at a certain level of society and the money stays down there. And that's a well-known fact. If you get a wealthy guy who builds a massive home, he builds a commercial building. You know, he's employing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people for a couple of years. So you get all these nice middle and upper class working people, including your architects and your builders and your engineers and all these people and crane operators and the companies that sell heavy equipment, and all these people are getting the money and they're infiltrating society with it. They're dispersing of their funds at the middle upper level. And then the plant that makes the heavy equipment, they spend the money. And, you know, aircraft, if they're rich, and the place that makes the steel for the building and the sheetrock, and all these places are getting all this wealth, as are the builders. That wealth infiltrates itself through society, okay? That's how economics works. So my point is this, that if you have a, if you believe in the supply side, in other words, trickle-down economics, then you need to go all in. Trump's tax plan is a little bit half-baked. He's leaving the high tax bracket at 40%, and he's cutting some corporate taxes, but what about those people that don't own a business, et cetera, right? So he's got some higher income. He's giving the middle class a tax cut. That's good in a way, because the middle class has been robbed by Obama. I've explained that according to the Consumer Price Index, inflation is supposedly at 1% roughly, right? But it's not, because the Consumer Price Index that calculates our inflation rate is an exclusionary index now, thanks to Bill Clinton, a little bit to Reagan, but mostly Clinton. It doesn't include food, transportation, real estate, or energy costs in mass. I mean, there's little pieces of it here and there, but in general, it does not. So that is what you spend 85% of your disposable income to live on. It doesn't count those items. Those are going up 6, 7, 8%. It's a documented fact. So unless the working man's wage is going up at that same pace, you're going broke, okay? Now, as the show wraps up, I want to kind of explain why you're going broke, all right? There's a thing called cultural Marxism I've talked about in the past. There was a school called the Frankfurt School set up by some Jewish people back in the day, and I don't remember the exact date of it, but it was to begin brainwashing society. Now, folks, one thing I don't get, there's people that get that do research, and they get really mad at Jews. A lot of this stuff, I love the Jews, I believe in Israel, you know me, right? But a lot of this stuff is hyper-saturated. A lot of these crazy programs like the Clowerdon Piven strategy, etc., are driven by Jews. I don't know why, okay? I don't understand why Jews tend to lean towards socialism and towards manipulation of society. I don't know why, but they're there. And there's people that will get so... so anti-Semitic based on it. And I can't explain to you why that is. It is one thing that does make me sad and make me sick a lot. But it's a fact. But anyway, so the Frankfurt School, and trust me, I'm not anti-Semitic. Don't get me wrong. It's a shame because God's children are blind. That's what's the shame. So cultural Marxism is the main ideological driver behind what we call political correctness today. Okay. It's the destructive criticism and undermining of basically all of our Western civilization institutions and our traditional moral underpinnings, our traditional values, okay? This is what I've told you. It's called critical theory. It's just a continuous attack. The extreme case of it is Antifa, these morons that say they're against fascism, but they're just against everything. They're absolute, full-grown, rotten, spoiled brats that put on chest protectors, hockey pads, hockey gloves, hockey helmets, and go out with weapons and hurt people for no reason. And if I have time, I'll touch on that a little more. A guy named Max Horkheimer, who was one of the leading Jewish Marxists of the Frankfurt School, okay? He pioneered cultural Marxism. He made a quote that said, "The revolution won't happen with guns." He said, "Rather, it will happen incrementally, year by year, generation by generation. We will gradually infiltrate their educational institutions and their political offices, transforming them slowly into Marxist entities as we move towards universal egalitarianism." So this stuff is not happening by accident. When you get into all this stuff, you've heard of Saul Alinsky rules for radicals. People don't know that Hillary Clinton wrote her thesis, her PhD thesis at Wellesley College on Saul Alinsky. This guy's a kook whack job whose number one goal was to destroy our society. Hillary met with him countless times in the late 60s. She entered Yale Law School, and then she wrote a bunch of, she became a super close friend of Alinsky. And in 2014, some of her letters came to light. But of course, Obama was in office. The media didn't care. They don't even want to look at how radical this guy is. But this stuff just demonstrates that Hillary considered Alinsky her most important mentor, and she was deeply committed to his radical political philosophy. In 71, Hillary began her internship at a law firm that was known for its most extreme left-wing radical politics and agenda, and she defended the Black Panthers, etc. Saul Alinsky, you probably all know that he, you know, claimed to be, you know, a revolutionary and whatever. Here's by Saul Alinsky, 8 points, he says, how to create a socialist state by Saul Alinsky. I've verified this over and over. There are 8 levels of control that must be obtained before you're able to create a socialist state. The first is the most important. Just listen to this. Number one, health care. Control healthcare and you control the people. Cloward and Piven said the same thing. These people want to break the back of society by hanging the physical and medical welfare, well-being of people on the government. Number two, how to create a socialist state by Saul Alinsky. Poverty. Increase the poverty level as high as possible. Poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you're providing everything for them to live. Number three, debt. Number three of how to create a socialist state by Saul Alinsky. Increase the debt to unsustainable levels. It says both personal, corporate, and government debt. Everyone's debt. Student loans are out of control now, right? Get every kid strapped in debt. And why does it say that? It says that way you're able to increase taxes and this will produce more poverty. If the government has more debt, they got to pay it. They got to drive more taxes. He admits here that taxes create poverty, folks. This is what the left argues isn't true. Number four on how to create a socialist state by Saul Alinsky, gun control. Remove people's ability to defend themselves from the government. That way you're able to create a police state. Does this sound like Obama's narrative, agenda? You bet. Number five, how to create a socialist state, Saul Alinsky, welfare. Take control of every aspect of their lives, food, housing, and income. Number five, education, or number six, I'm sorry, education. Take control of what people read and listen to. Take control of what children learn in school. And, I mean, think about Common Core, folks. This is what we're doing. Number seven, Saul Alinsky, how to create a socialist state. He says religion. Remove the belief in God from the government and schools, right? No prayer in schools. Strip down everything out of government. Tell them that separation of church and state. Create that lie. And his number eight method to levels of control, he calls them, to create a socialist state. Number eight, class warfare. Divide the people into the wealthy and the poor. This will cause more discontent, and it will be easier to take or tax the wealthy with the support of the poor. They turn the poor against the wealthy. The wealthy are productive members of society. They're not evil. I hate that concept that, you know, in most cases, and I've been around a lot of people that are very, very wealthy. They can be eccentric, don't get me wrong, but they're very driven people. You don't basically build from the ground up successfully without a lot of drive and a lot of personality. And a lot of them are frankly very good with people because they have to be. And it's deceptive. But if you think about Obamacare, that's why he rammed it down our throats. That's why they don't really care what Trump does, as long as he keeps it there, because it's the number one way, number one level of control to force us to a crashing society, to bankrupt the nation. I'm forever talking about our debt. He says increase the debt to unsustainable levels. That way they're able to increase taxes and they'll produce more poverty. Right now we got so much debt, they're freaking out about Trump's tax plan. We're out of control in this country. They just want more and more taxes. It is redistributing wealth, folks. It kills the economy. It creates poverty. It just does. When all the money goes back to the government, when has the government ever been worth a hoot with money? They're terrible. They spend over $800,000 per job per year. Google's at about $69,000 per job per year. They're one of the highest paying companies in the world. Okay? So keep this in mind. Healthcare. They want to, you know, make sure we have universal health care. That's why they want a single payer. This is Hillary. This is all part of the socialist agenda. They want to be the elite. They want to increase poverty. They want to increase debt. They want gun control. They want to get everybody on welfare and control them. They want to control our education system. They want to remove religion, and they want to divide the people into the wealthy and the poor and class warfare, black against white, etc. Have they done that? Yes. Folks, you look at this, you look at the 10 planks of communism, it's here. And you could say, well, if it's here and we're doing fine, then it's no big deal. No, it's coming on stronger, faster, and harder than ever. The media is basically behaving in a communist propaganda way. What do I say? Prepare yourself. God's got a system. He says works. It always prevails. It always proves true. Just because it's down, or just because you're not getting these big returns you want, doesn't mean you faint, you grow weary and faint. What you do is you continue to buy, because what goes up must come down. What comes down must go up. Only the thing is, you are building wealth brick by brick. You have to trust me, especially if you don't have life experience. Just keep building that asset base. You will be proud of yourself. Don't lie to yourself and say, I could have bought this stock or that, when the fact of the matter is you couldn't have timed it right. So folks, come see us. Let us help you diversify biblically. Have a great weekend. I appreciate you. I love you. I really appreciate your prayers of spiritual protection. Take care. God bless, and we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye.